Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. The rise of the internet has been a game changer for political activism. With the ability to instantly communicate with one another, set up meetings, share lots of information quickly, publish images and videos, and focus public attention on important issues, political organizing has become more efficient and more creative. Millions of people all over the world now rely on online social networks to remain connected with like-minded people and sometimes launch revolutions, as in Egypt or Hong Kong. Although the origins of this form of social and political organizing seem like ancient history, only a decade or two has passed since the early days of internet-based activism. During those short years, we have seen the rise and fall and evolution of movements like the anti-globalization, anti-Iraq war, and Occupy Wall Street protests. What can we learn from these earlier movements for social change and how they organized and developed means of communication? My guest Todd Wolfson's new book chronicles what he calls the cyber left. Digital Rebellion, the Birth of the Cyber Left, is an examination of, quote, the tactics and strategy of resistance in the years 1994 to 2006, with a particular focus on the independent media network, or indie media. Todd Wolfson now joins me. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, how do you define the cyber left? That's a pretty broad term. And also give our audience a short history on the independent media network.
Sure. Maybe I'll start with indie media. The Independent Media Network developed in 1999 during the World Trade Organization protests. The organizers, that was one of the biggest uprisings in the U.S. that we've seen. I'm sure your listeners are aware. And the organizers, when they were planning it, believed that they had to use the internet to create their own news outlet because they couldn't trust Fox News or CNN. And so they took advantage of the newly developing internet and they created the Seattle Independent Media Center. And the goal was to connect activists, organizers, independent journalists with a media platform so that they could tell and share their stories. And they had a FM radio station, they had a daily newspaper, they made video news releases each day, and they also created an open publishing website, which was, I think, the first of its kind, the first website where people could go on, tell their story, and instantaneously see their story up on the site. It prefigures the things we're so accustomed to today, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or even blogging in general. So indie media after Seattle, there was a whole lot of excitement, particularly within the anti-globalization or global social justice movement. And as protests emerged in different cities, whether it was protests against the Democratic National Convention in L.A., or the Republican National Convention in Philly, or the World Bank meetings, when the protest would develop, there would also be an independent media center that developed. And many of these centers stayed around. And say by 2002, 2003, there are 100 of them on six continents, creating news in over 30 languages, and they were networked together. Some of them really depended on the internet, but many of them had newspapers or radio stations, which I believe in LA there was a very strong radio component to the indie media. So it became this vibrant network that told the story from a left perspective of communities and struggle and of the global social justice movement.
I have to say it was so interesting reading your book because this was something that I was personally involved in, having attended some of the earliest meetings in Los Angeles on the Independent Media Network, involved also in the website for the Democratic National Convention coming to Los Angeles. So this is a story that I know. Some of our younger audience may not know, and some of our audience who may have become politically active later may not know. But the Indie Media Network and many of the members of the cyber left, as you call them, in the 90s, were deeply influenced by the Zapatista movement. And from that, they, as your book chronicles, adopted the sort of organizational structures, horizontal decision making. Can you tell us about the level of influence, in particular the freeing the media address by Subcomandante Marcos, given by video to a teach-in in the 90s that is since quite famous?
Yeah, I mean, there are many origin points to indie media, and two, I would say that cyber left writ large. But the strongest, the thickest root, the thing that has the most, I would say, ideological kind of intersection and influence is definitely the Zapatistas. And so the Zapatistas had their own kind of uprising in 1994, the day the North American Free Trade Agreement went into effect. So there's this parallelism between the WTO, which was the NAFTA on steroids, right? It was a global free trade versus the northern our hemisphere. And so they had an uprising on the day the North American Free Trade Agreement went into effect. And in their struggle with the Mexican state, they used the internet and other media too. They put out communiques, they used newspapers, they were using radio, but they were very strategic in using the internet. And in a moment of struggle with the Mexican state where they were overmatched, they were able to use the internet to make a call, or at least their supporters were able to use the internet to make a call that stayed the hand of the Mexican army and enabled a peace accord, which the Mexican state eventually rescinded on parts of it, but they got some autonomy over land, etc. But what's very interesting about this is building on a sort of a real identification as an important movement, the Zapatistas then made a call for two things. One, a network of struggle against neoliberal capitalism, and two, a network of communications that links different points of struggle together. And then Subcomandante Marcos made an address, as you marked, at a Freeing the Media conference that took place in New York City in 97. And many of the founders of Indie Media were at that conference. And so Subcomandante Marcos made that call. Again, we need this global communications network. Folks who founded Indie Media were there, heard that call, and put it into practice in Seattle 2 years later. So there's a direct intersection, and many of the founders could always point to the Zapatistas as both a place where they got ideological direction and nourishment, but then also practical skills and or at least a practical vision of how to use the internet.
Todd, how well did some of the organizational and structures of decision making and some of the tactics that a group like Indie Media took from and other groups in the cyber left that they took from the Zapatistas, how well did that translate into U.S. social movements? Because, of course, Indie Media is still active in some countries, but it doesn't have nearly the level of influence that it did in the 90s, late 90s, and through the early 2000s.
Absolutely. I think that there are some problems in trying to translate the practice of a land-based, geographically rooted struggle in southern Mexico and translating it either into a U.S. context or into the context of a global movement. And so the Zapatistas were very democratic. They were rooted in communities, right? And so there was democratic decision-making processes that have a long history in what was largely a Mayan culture. That got translated as a deep democratic processes and practices in Indie Media, which is a global network where people are trying to make decisions across time zone and across language. And so I think there are real struggles throughout the history of Indie Media and real problems making democratic decisions. I think what we saw in Indie Media was that it worked well when there were external crises or external situations. Indie Media activists are able to swoop in and coordinate and act in convergence from multiple points. We could call it swarming. But there was very little ability to collectively create a shared program. And I think that's because of an attempt to directly translate Zapatista practice into different circumstances. So I think there's real problems. And we could think about it around democratic practice. We could also think about it around, you know, flat network structures without any hierarchy or accountability. We could also think about it in the sort of vision of multiple struggles with no struggle at the lead. All of these things which were part of the Zapatista call and were interpreted by Indie Media and other movements were important interpretations, but might not have translated perfectly.
Now, in your book, you write, quote, "I began to see techno-utopian tendencies that favor the leadership of white male college-educated activists at the expense of building a movement that connected to those most oppressed. Was this the Achilles heel of the cyber left?
For me, I think from my vantage, absolutely, it is the Achilles heel. So in all the cyber left movements, you see people talk about class and capitalism, but it feels often like it's, I mean, people are opposed to these things, but they're not using an analysis of class and capitalism that helps them build strategy about what is to be done. So I think that analysis would lead people to say, we need to embed indie media centers in the local communities we're working with, create programs of training folks in those communities so that they can take ownership over those websites. But that sort of analysis never happened. And so what you got were, I think, really important technological tools. I mean, again, the indie media open publishing, I think, prefigures all the things we take for granted today, whether it's Facebook and Twitter or community journalism and blogging. But they weren't able to connect in deep ways to local communities. And I believe that was because those who had the most power in the indie media movement, because it was lack of transparent power structures, it was very invisible forms of power, because folks who are white, middle class, college educated had the most power, they tended to track the movement towards technology over local struggle.
Right. And so also this then follows into the question of whether process often trumped action, whether the adherence to not having a clear agenda, leaderlessness, ended up being the result why even later formations of the cyber left, such as the Occupy Wall Street movement, might not have lasted.
Absolutely. From my vantage, that's absolutely the case. I mean, again, who can really argue with trying to have democracy in movements? It's a critical question, but there needs to be some question of what sorts of democracy make the most sense, and whether we actually want to build leaders. I mean, I like the language of leaderlessness, but I think if we're really trying to build the leadership of the poor, for instance, that you need to really create programs that put them in leadership, that get people prepared to take leadership and accountability structures. So I think what you saw in indie media and certainly in Occupy is that the non-centralized leaderlessness and kind of direct democratic processes lead to quick development, really quick moving movements, whether it's indie media or Occupy, that develop really fast because there is no center. Anyone can take it on. And that's excellent, the growth. But I think it also leads to the sort of quick ending of these movements. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to build infrastructure, et cetera.
Finally, what do you make of the newest U.S.-wide movement that has emerged just in the past year, led by and comprised primarily by people of color in communities that have seen not just widespread poverty, but police violence? I'm, of course, talking about the Black Lives Matter campaigns that were sparked in Ferguson, led primarily by African-Americans and many women especially, also relying heavily on online communications and some of the tools that now the centralized corporate networks offer, such as Facebook and Twitter, but maybe making as good use of them as possible. What do you make of those, and are those a more sort of authentic expression of the cyber left that you are heartened by?
I'm definitely heartened by them. I think it's a great development. Well, I mean, obviously the precursor to these developments is heartbreaking, but what we've seen in the Black Lives Matter movement is people taking leadership from the struggle on the ground, so people of color, women, African Americans, using the internet to accelerate that struggle, but keeping the movement, one, building institutions, so there's a lot of institutional development we see in this stage, but two, keeping the movement grounded in and led by those most oppressed by racism, police brutality, etc. So I think it's a great development, and in many ways they're picking up and taking what is most exciting about the cyber left and marrying it to logic and local struggle that gives it great possibility.
And then finally, Todd, is there a contradiction in what I mentioned, which is that these struggles are increasingly left to rely on the Facebooks and the Twitters that, of course, can quite dangerously cut off the ties that we build?
Yeah, there's definitely a danger to this, and it's one of the, I think, tensions that indie media brought to the fore. They were very careful about keeping and maintaining their own servers, and there's a history there of FBI raids and states going after indie media servers. And they did that because they wanted independence from corporate platforms. And that leads to a hard road in what they built. I think contemporary movements or Black Lives Matter, for instance, but also the Arab uprisings, and I think Occupy as well, have utilized corporate platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and it's been to their advantage thus far. But in the long term, one has to question whether there are going to be some concerns, issues, or problems that emerge if we don't figure out independent platforms that do some of this work.
Well, you can write another book about that, and we'll have you back on the show. Thank you so much, Todd Wolfson, for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Todd Wolfson is the author of Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left. This is Uprising. Bipasha Shom is our senior producer. Anna Buss is our assistant producer. Dan Swerdlove is our technical director. Christian Beck is our production assistant. Teddy Robinson and Jonathan Alexander are our audio engineers. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/UprisingWithSonali. Our website is UprisingWithSonali.com. Our theme music is by Ketsal. I'm Sonali Kohatkar, host and executive producer of Uprising. I'll see you tomorrow. We'll